you're in the home 6010.
Focus. Fantasy. Fantasy Focus.
Welcome to today's Fantasy Focus. You can watch us every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time on ESPN's Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube feeds, as well as the ESPN app. And if you're listening to the audio feed, today's podcast is presented by Geico. You can download Fantasy Focus wherever you get your podcast. With that, we say hello on this Monday, August 16th. Field and Matthew here as always, but a welcomed return from the star herself. Stefania Bell is back. After 2 weeks in Bora Bora.
Here's my question for you. I have a question for you, Stefania, because okay. I was looking and I could not find it.
Ask away. I'm sure you have many questions.
Well, just I was looking. Daniel didn't know the answer to this. I wanted the Stefania Bell 2021 Boondoggle Tour t-shirt. I was trying to look for it and I did not. Is the shop not open yet? Where can I buy the t-shirt that has all the dates that you went to, all the boondoggling that you went to, the cute little graphic, like I'd like an extra large. And then I was also thinking Beth wanted a tank top.
Beth, I brought a travel gift back for you. Know that already.
Yeah, of course. Wow. Understood.
Understood. No.
The boondoggling tour. Like you want the merch. Right. You want the merch from the tour, boondoggling tour.
Right. The closest Stefania has ever come to a training camp, because you know this is all the guys, is back when they had XFL or NFL Europe, she'd be like, yeah, I got to go to Munich.
Right.
Got to go spend a couple weeks in Barcelona.
Right. When they had the Pro Bowl in Hawaii, Stefania, and the season's over, Stefania's like, I need a month to really interview everyone.
Right. Yeah.
You guys you're giving me some good ideas.
And set everything up.
I think I got to write these down and take some notes.
And a lot of people like to stop it. Of course, she was at training camp. And I'm like, maybe maybe she's not. Because here's the thing. Like, if you follow at Stefania ESPN on Instagram, I do.
Yes.
Not since my beignet photos has there been a more brutal punishment of that platform. Has there been a more, more. And so it's just basically what I think she did was she was at like some resort. And then, like, she was just like, oh, by the way, the Colts are training, like, 4 miles away. And she's like, hang on, let me put my Mai Tai down. And zoom in real quickly.
What resort is 4 miles from the Colts training?
I just go with it. And then it just, like, zooms in for, like, some grainy photo of, like, oh, there's Marlon Mack limping along. Okay, good, got it.
No.
Boom, bingo, bango, bring me the lobster.
Yeah, so I think what actually happened was that she was wherever she was, Bora Bora, Bali, Australia. I don't even know if you can get in Australia right now if you're not a citizen, but whatever, go with it again.
Yes.
And then someone was like, oh, yeah, you're supposed to be at Colts camp today. So she paid some, like, teenager to, like, run up to the chain link fence around the facility, and that's why the photos were so low grade. It's because the kid has taken the photo from, like, 80 yards away.
Right.
But that's why it's such poor quality.
I love how you guys pick out the ones. Nobody said anything about my George Kittle photo, which was up super close and it was fantastic.
But you
guys comment about the Colts.
Too close.
Yeah.
Or maybe about my Joe Burrow photo. But here's the thing. Let me just remind you.
So Burrow's done for the season?
Yeah.
Is that what we're breaking? Is that what we're not breaking?
Jokes aside, kids, there are different parameters for when media attend training camp this year. So you're often on the far side of the field.
I can only zoom in just so much.
But I'm trying
are you defining
to bring
yourself
the people
as media?
What they want.
But did we just bury the headline there? Are you defining yourself as media now?
Media royalty. No, I'm telling you now. Stefania gives us
Hall
cash.
Of Fame, media Hall of Famer, if
that's
I'm not
right.
mistaken, correct?
Stefania gives sports cachet. Hall of Famer. She's a
that's
fantasy
right.
sports Hall
that's
of Famer.
Right. Yeah.
You drop
that
Stefania's
is actually
name,
true.
It's very useful.
Oh.
Very useful.
People love Stefania.
Yeah, with good reason.
Yeah.
All right, so we'll get to Stefania's camp tour because she was all over the map and we give her a hard time. But she did a great job traveling around the country, literally taking in some of the sights and sounds from a variety of camps. We're going to pick her brain on what she learned from Patrick Mahomes to players of less high caliber to Patrick Mahomes during her 2 weeks on the road. It's great to have her back. But what we're going to do start is look back on the week that was in the NFL preseason. We had 2 games Thursday night, we had 1 game Sunday, and then we had, 2 games Friday. There was a bunch of games on Saturday. That's really
bunch
what it comes
of game,
down.
Yeah. A lot of football. We had football.
Yes, we did. It was great. It's good to have football back. And we're going to properly react, right? We're not going to overreact. We're not going to underreact.
Absolutely
we're going to react No, seriously, though.
No, 100%. Patrick Mahomes or Justin Fields at QB1? Stop. Right.
See? I've been telling you this for a long time.
I just want to know.
Who's faster?
Where are we at?
Who's faster?
Right.
Justin Fields. Ipso
Justin
facto,
Fields. Justin. There you go.
But no, but no. Listen, I think look, more so than any
week
other
one
community.
Of the preseason.
No, but more so, and I'm not, like, I'm very much including myself in this bucket.
Yes, sir.
I think more so than anything else, when it comes to the overreactions of, there are two ways in which we overreact collectively as football fans during the preseason. One is to quarterback play, for better or worse, and two is to fantasy thoughts, right? Like, some things do prove to be relevant and true.
Sure.
Other things are much more blips on the radar. Now, it's always difficult to figure out which ones are blips on the radar and which one of them are built to last.
Maybe for you. Not for me.
Oh, okay.
I have the definitive answers.
Right.
Just ask me.
Okay, gotcha.
And we just bingo bango.
Let's do it then. So we're going to
go back in time. Like, I don't think I've ever been wrong. Like, just seriously, I know. Right. Yeah, I know the answers to this stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
Dude, you're a year away from Daniel Times' Ride or Die.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Nine lives. You're a cat. Anyways, let's get to the preseason.
You know where I would have really crushed? Where I would have really crushed in terms of fantasy analysis? Before the
1840s?
Internet. Before the internet. Before there was any digital record of any of my picks. Yeah.
Accountability
is so exactly.
Lame. That's how you got the gig. Yeah. I mean, who are we kidding?
That's how he kept the gig.
Exactly.
All right, so let's go through it as much as we can, maybe game by game.
With
not too much, but just a little bit, because, again, we want to make sure that we are properly reacting. So the Bears did beat the Dolphins 20-13 on Saturday, and I think on the Bears side, there's no mystery as to what the biggest story of the day was, Matthew. It was Justin Fields, who started off slow. In the first half, it was not much to write home about, and then he picked things up and got things going in a major way, which included a throwing touchdown to Jesse James on a wide-open throwback play, and then a rushing touchdown from Justin Fields. It felt like that was sort of, for those that believed in Justin Fields during the pre-draft process, Saturday was a little bit of a mirror image of what you had hoped to see from him based off what you saw at Ohio State. It was great.
Yeah, listen,
Parts of it were great,
exactly. But I think the biggest thing is you sort of like, for lack of a better way to put it, you get it. Like, I mean, you saw enough there in terms of anticipation, in terms of timing, in terms of like the touchdown run was really a thing of beauty. It was not a designed run. It was him making something out of nothing. And there was enough there that you go like, oh, I get it. Like, you get the excitement for Justin Fields. And with all due respect to Andy Dalton, Justin Fields brings a different element of dynamicism. Is that a word? Is that a word?
Dynamicism?
Dynamicism?
No. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Princeton. Like, so, but whatever. Brings a different
dynamic.
Oh, that's the word I was looking for.
Oh, it's dynamic.
Oh, dynamic. Yeah. Oh,
okay. Never heard that one before.
Never a doubt from Daniel. Thanks, guys. So, anyway, he brings a different dynamic than Andy Dalton does. And it's so, you know, my friend Peter Overzet recently wrote, Justin Fields is inevitable. And I think that's correct. I think that's, I don't know when Justin Fields starts field, but he's gonna, and I think it's sooner rather than later. And honestly, it probably should be game one. I don't know that it's going to be, but it probably should be game one.
It probably should be game one. I think it might be a little bit later than that. But one thing I will say is that, like, I know you commented, I believe, on Shefty's Instagram about how, like, if you knew he was going to be a week one starter, you would have him as a top 12 quarterback.
Easy.
I think it's important to note, though, that, like, I believe the foundation of that thought is not what you saw on Saturday. It's actually what you saw during his two seasons as a starting quarterback at Ohio State. Saturday was, I don't know about total confirmation, because, again, I mean, no one was perfect in the preseason.
No.
He had a couple of all the rookies had some shaky moments, including Justin Fields early, but you saw why the Bears were enamored by the player. I do think that there's a certain deference to Andy Dalton, but if Justin Fields is a starting quarterback sooner rather than later, he's going to be a player we discuss ad infinitum this season.
He certainly needs to be drafted, and he's not really. He's been so far in drafts that have happened, he's undrafted 70% in 70% of leagues. And like, this is a guy that at some point is going to be like the hottest waiver pickup of the year.
So,
and I don't mind him as a,
in this case.
Huh?
Is it worth getting ahead of the curve then in this case?
I think it depends on how competitive your league is. And, I mean, like, if you're in a 10-team, one quarterback league, maybe not. It depends on, again, if like you're in a league filled with sharks or if it's more of a casual league. So it sort of depends. But at some point, there is going to be a massive rush to the waiver wire for Justin Fields. What it will tell you is, like, it's a fantasy-friendly offense. He obviously has tremendous skill with his legs as well, so he's a dual-threat quarterback. And then you add Allen Robinson, who wasn't out there. And by the way, yes, it was his first start. Miami's good defense.
Like, and he was not good against their starters. That was, and that's been part of the narrative, is that, like, you know, this happened once the Dolphins defense that we know was no longer on the field. So I'm excited. Like, I don't want to poo-poo the performance, but, you know, there's a little bit of context that's important.
Again, we'll move on very quickly. But last year, Jalen Hurts started 4 games at the end of the year, right? He was bad from an NFL standpoint. He completed less than 52% of his passes. He was the 9th best quarterback in fantasy over those 4 weeks.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
The rushing ability that Justin Fields has, plus I think he's a better passer than Jalen Hurts, just to give one example, and the weapons around him. Like, I mean, this is a team that the Bears last year with Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky were top 10 in pass attempts. Like, Matt Nagy likes to throw, and they've got some nice offensive weapons around Justin Fields.
Yeah,
like,
no, I hear you.
He's, again, it may not always be pretty, but he will absolutely put up big fantasy points once he's the starter in Chicago.
If you're towards the back end of your league in terms of getting your first quarterback, I actually like the idea of pairing, let's say, a Matthew Stafford or Ryan Tannehill with another young quarterback who's got significant upside, whether it's a Trey Lance, we'll talk about shortly, or a Justin Field. On the other side of the ball, Matthew, I know you were...
Tannehill's going top 10, though, just so you know, by the way, at this point.
His ADP is... If you're at the end of your league and you're the 9th person to take one, then you might be...
Yes.
Totally agree. Take him a Mahomes, so you don't need to draft Justin Fields. My point.
Fair enough.
Malcolm Brown was busy for the Dolphins on Saturday, man.
This was
9 carries for 8 yards, so not exactly a miraculous performance from Malcolm Brown, but he was playing with the ones for much of the time that he was out there. And also, Miles Gaskin was playing with the twos for part of the time that he was
out
there. Are you concerned?
A little bit.
Okay.
Look, like, there's an argument that says, like, they know what they have in Miles Gaskin, so they want to see what they get out of Malcolm Brown. But then, I don't know why. I would have been fine if Gaskin hadn't played with the twos. He came in when Jacoby Brissett came in. He was playing with the twos. After the game, Brian Flores, head coach of the Dolphins, said all three guys, meaning Brown, Gaskin, and Savon Ahmed, are all going to be involved. That they like all three guys, and that all three guys will be involved this season. Malcolm Brown is a good pass protector. He's a solid veteran. He's not a guy that fumbles. He's also like a plotter. I mean, he looked like he was moving in mud.
Right.
I mean, as you mentioned, 9 yards on 8 carries or whatever it was.
It's pretty clear that teams see something in Malcolm Brown that's just like reliable, right? The Rams had him. They used him frequently, even when they had Todd Gurley. Last year, he had 2 touchdowns in the first game of the season. The Lions tried to sign him away from the Rams when he was a restricted free agent.
Yep.
The Rams matched that contract when they had Todd Gurley on the massive deal. Miami brings him aboard this offseason. So clearly he's got some traits that coaches value more than we as fantasy managers value.
That's correct. And so I'm a big Miles Gaskin fan. I've talked about it on this show. And this is concerning. My belief is ultimately that Miles Gaskin's talent will win out here. And that if you're choosing a running back for fantasy purposes to start from the Dolphins, it's still going to be Miles Gaskin. Again, he's going to be much more involved in the passing game than Malcolm Brown is. He's a nice pass catcher. But you can't see that kind of usage and not be a little bit concerned, especially because Gaskin's been going among the top 20 running backs. Like, Gaskin's ADP needs to drop at least somewhat. I dropped him a few spots in my rankings. Not crazy, but now he's in the 20 to 25 range, as opposed to I think I had him at 18 prior to this game.
I'm not concerned, because I think that even if Malcolm Brown does get some run at the beginning of the season, it's going to be like, you know, the short wick on the candle, right? It's going to burn out quick, and you're going to be like, okay, let's just cut to the chase here. One of these players is dynamic. One of them is, as you said, a lot less dynamic. And I think the Dolphins ultimately need that dynamicism.
Yeah, that's a word.
Your word.
Yeah,
to borrow Mike Clay phrase.
Yeah,
cream rises. as will happen in the Miami backfield.
I really quickly want to talk about.
And that's why I didn't move. I moved him down a little bit because there will be some vulturing. But I still think Miles Gaskin is a viable player, and Miles Gaskin will be part of my love hate list, which comes out tomorrow.
Hey.
Love hate publishes tomorrow.
Great. All right,
FYI, heads up. And it'll be free.
Yes.
Free. Just speaking of dynamics, I know Rondale Moore is a guy, Field, that you are a big fan of. And actually, you put out a tweet about Rondale Moore. I kind of wanted to show that here on our screen, if you don't mind, if you want to let the people know what you tweeted.
You know, I don't ask for much in life, but 15 touches a game for Rondale Moore would be tremendous.
That'd be great.
This was during the Cowboys and Cardinals game on Friday night, and Rondale Moore was one of the few players in Arizona's offense that you recognize that was out there. No Kyler Murray, no DeAndre Hopkins, no A.J. Green, amongst other players. And he looked great. I mean, no surprise, right? So the question, though, with Rondale Moore is going to be two things. It reminded me of what I saw from Laviska Shenault on Saturday as well. Is that so? Rondale Moore is tiny. We all know that. But he's a piece of dynamite, right? He is explosive as all get out. There are two things that concern me for Rondale Moore in fantasy. One is whether the Cardinals would be committed enough to actually get him the requisite touches for him to be fantasy relevant week over week. And, like, they got five on Friday. It felt like, oh, my God, he was so busy. Like, are they going to get him 15 touches a game? Because
no.
If not, the other problem is this. And this is my Laviska Shenault thing that I was thinking about when I was watching the way they used him on Saturday night. Is that, like, there may be zero air yards for Rondale Moore this
year.
It might be negative air yardage, which, unless you're playing in, like, the San Francisco offense that just everything is yards after catch, it feels like. Well, not everything. We'll talk about Trey Lance's bomb in a few minutes. But a lot of their offense is run after catch. It's just hard to have big fantasy superstars in that offense. So I want the player to be a thing. Just a little concerned.
I don't think those factors. Here's what I'm going to tell you. I think he's going to be a much better NFL player than he is going to be fantasy asset, at least this season.
Yeah.
I think it was a nice draft pick by the Cardinals. Do I think Cliff Kingsbury will be creative with him? I do. Do I think he helps Kyler Murray? I do. But you just sort of think about that offense that goes four wide, five wide sometimes as well. Like, it just so many players are on the field. And then, as you mentioned, no Christian Kirk, no A.J. Green, no DeAndre Hopkins. Chase Edmonds and James Conner are going to demand the ball. Like, there's just so many mouths to feed. And we know that DeAndre Hopkins is the alpha dog. Again, for consistent fantasy production out of Rondale Moore, I'm just not sure I see it. Honestly, I'm not sure I see it for anyone in Arizona in terms of consistent fantasy production outside of Hopkins, Murray, and the running backs.
Yeah, and just to put a bow on that point about zero air yards, he had four targets on Friday for a total of 7 air yards. I was being a little bit hyperbolic, but the point is that most of his damage is going to be done at or near the line of scrimmage.
By the way, Secret Squirrel, I don't know if you saw that tweet that you just put up there, or if you just, you know, but Field Yates said on Twitter, he says, "I don't ask for much in life." And I would like to take issue with that because I disagree with that. Like, I mean, like, let's think about all the things that Field Yates wants, like, you know, craft beer, time with Cisco,
New
you
Jordans.
Know, time on Nantucket with Chapin,
absolutely,
you know, free clothes from everyone. All I know is Field's got 8 billion friends and 7.9 billion of them are clothes designers because they constantly send Field stuff. He's always Natalie dressed and giving shout outs on the gram. So I just, in terms of like, when you say you don't ask for much, I disagree. I think you ask for a lot.
No, the thing is that, like, I don't ask for much. Whether things come my way or not is a different story, but I don't ask for much.
Maybe it's me.
The truth.
Yeah.
Maybe I ask for a lot. Is that what it is? Am I projecting? I might be projecting here. Because I do ask for much, and then everyone just sends it to Field.
And then Field,
it's very upsetting. Yeah. Right. Exactly.
That's messed up your EQ.
Yeah, there you go.
49ers. Right,
what do we got?
49ers. Lost to the Chiefs. Is the 49ers season over after losing 19-16 on Friday night,
it might
Saturday
be.
Night? Yeah, it's
it might
a little
be
concerning.
Done. Sorry, Stefania.
But Stefania Bell.
Trey Lance
did, of course, come in early. Jimmy Garoppolo started the game for the 49ers. What did you see out of Trey Lance other than that 80-yard touchdown bomb to Trent Sherfield?
I actually think what I saw from him in camp was more telling than even what you saw in the game. I think, look, we've talked about it on the podcast already, like, what's going to happen? Is Jimmy G going to be the starter? Are they going to give it to Trey Lance? When's it going to happen? And that was the buzz in camp, and it was the buzz among the media as well. And Kyle Shanahan at this point is joking about it. So when he spoke to us after practice one day, he said, Trey Lance is going to play this year. And then he goes, okay, I'll let everyone run to Twitter on that, you know, kind of knowing this would be the story. But he said they clearly have design packages for him. They were working on separate red zone offense drills with him 49ers have not been good in the red zone for a couple of years. Everybody knows that. They are making packages specific to his talents. But I think they understand also that he's raw and that he needs time on the field. And Kyle Shanahan really wanted to see how he reacted to a real opposing defense in this game. And there were struggles, but there was also this beautiful deep ball, something that we haven't seen in a long time. So I do still feel like after spending a couple days at Niners camp that Jimmy G's the starter in Shanahan's mind. Because if you start Trey Lance, how do you go back is the question. So I think as long as nothing happens to really destabilize that, they start with him, but Trey Lance will be in the wings, nipping at his heels. And if there's an opportunity for Trey Lance to become the starter, he becomes it.
So recently, Matthew was on the Adam Schefter podcast, which is a great listen. New episodes usually come out on Mondays. And you guys talked on a couple of occasions about how you got to follow the money, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to follow the money and it leads you a different direction. So the only thing that I'm curious about with the 49ers is that if Jimmy Garoppolo is on their roster Saturday at 4 p.m. before their first game of the season, he gets $25 million guaranteed. Like
that feels like a lot of money.
If he's a backup quarterback by week four, it's a ton of money. And maybe they feel like he's just too valuable that even if Trey Lance takes over early, if something happens to Trey down the stretch.
Can I respond to that?
Sure.
Because I think there is a huge drop-off between 1, 2, and 3. And the 49ers, one of the things that's happened, I understand about the money, and I don't, you know the balance sheet system better than I do, but I will tell you this. One of the things the 49ers have learned, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch in particular, is that they have to have depth at their positions because they've dealt with so many injuries. So what happens if you invest everything in Trey Lance and then he gets hurt? Your drop-off is huge. I don't.
Who's the third-string quarterback for the 49ers?
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, but I'm asking.
No, exactly.
No, I understand. That's the.
His name is. It's Mr. Exactly.
Is that what
it's
is?
Exactly. Yeah. Quarterback. Exactly.
His name is like, Exactly.
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 Yes.
Is that like? Is that?
Exactly.
Mr. Exactly. Mr. Exactly. By the way, sounds like a bad character Russell Wilson might do on Twitter.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Like, hey, Mr. Exactly. No, and then Sierra's just like, no. Let's workshop that a little bit. Like, you
can
know,
get a gif of that, please.
Yes. Of Matthew exactly doing that. Gif? Yes, please. Kyle actually told us who the third string quarterback
is. Like Mr. Invincible. Or whatever.
Mr. Unlimited.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I'm a Mr. Unlimited.
So
right.
Stefania's probably right.
Yeah,
again,
much better than Mr.
Nate Sudfeld and Josh Rosen.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, by the way, to like count. Okay. It's a lot easier for like I don't empathize with owners when they have to pay a big bill, like the printing billion. So I'm not like totally concerned about the bottom line. I'm just saying, like, from a football business standpoint, insurance policies are nice. $25 million insurance policies are substantial. But
if you're going to the Super Bowl, it's worth it.
But Stefania, that's the thing. We had this argument, you know, earlier in the year on this podcast. The 49ers, I think, not that they'll ever publicly say this, but it's sort of look in the mirror time for the 49ers in terms of like, do we think we have a legit shot at the Super Bowl this year or do we not? Because it's one of those things. It's like, do they think they can win a Super? If they think they're Super Bowl contenders and they're not rebuilding, and I think that would be my guess is how they feel in that building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Then it's just like, okay, what quarterback gives them the best chance at winning a Super Bowl? And do they think they can get there with a rookie quarterback who, by the way, doesn't have a ton of experience in college either?
Hasn't played a game in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah, played one game last
year. One game last year.
Hasn't played a game in 2 years.
Right.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see.
So, yeah, there was some excitement from Trey Lance. As it was fonted on the graphic here, uneven, right? I mean, took four sacks, held the ball a little bit too long, was not helped by his hands of his receivers. But Trey Lance seems like he's going to eventually take that job and probably sooner than later in San Francisco. Last thought from that game, and we can make this really quick. Any thoughts at all on Trey Sermon? He ran the ball 9 times for 26 yards, Matthew. Raheem Mostert on Saturday night. They were definitely playing their backups for most of the evening.
Trey Sermon is somebody else that will make the love list when it comes out tomorrow, just so you know.
Okay.
So, like, look, I like Raheem Mostert quite a bit, but here's the things we know. The 49ers can run the ball very, very well. Whoever the starting running back for the 49ers is will be fantasy relevant. They use a lot of guys there, but given the injury history of the other players in San Francisco and Trey Sermon's talent and sort of how his skill set fits the kind of scheme that Shanahan runs, I think Trey Sermon, especially given current ADP, is very much worth a flyer. I like Trey Sermon.
Cry to backfield, though. I still think Raheem Mostert is being undervalued. All right, we're going to come back and talk about a couple more takeaways from the first week of the preseason. But first, do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And I bet it can be hard work. But you know what's easy? Bundling policies with GEICO. GEICO makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's GEICO easy. Visit GEICO.com today. That's GEICO.com.
Football is almost here, and there's no better place to get in on the action than with DraftKings, the leader in one-day fantasy sports. As the season is quickly approaching, DraftKings is your one-stop shop to make it rain all season long. To bring you even closer to the action, DraftKings is giving all new players a free shot at $1 million during week one. If you haven't tried DraftKings yet, preseason is the perfect time to test that strategy. All right, it's simple. Just pick your lineup, stay under the salary cap, and see how your team stacks up against the competition. I mean, literally nothing adds to the excitement of watching a game quite like having a free shot at huge cash prizes. And while you're perfecting your daily fantasy skills, don't forget to check out DraftKings free-to-play pools, where there's even more cash up for grabs. Head on over to the app right now. Download the DraftKings app and use the code FFF. For a limited time, new players can get a free shot at $1 million during week one. Don't miss out on all this action. Enter code FFF to get a free shot at millions of dollars in prizes with your first deposit. That's code FFF only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details. Matthew Berry, I hate to interrupt here. It's a thing that normally you do on this podcast. However, I would like to say, Phil Yates did one time ask for Blue Apron, my friend Kurt Vandermast tells me, as a part of this show.
Right.
So let's not forget the Blue Apron ask.
Yeah, good call, but Kurt.
You know?
Thanks for the beer, Kurt. Love you, buddy.
Yeah.
Sorry, I asked for one thing. Okay.
That's a good point.
I asked for two things.
Matthew gets no support on this podcast basically ever. So I wanted to give him a little bit of love.
I'll tell you some other things that you've asked for.
You've asked for
world peace. You've asked for to end hunger. You've asked for fighting cancer research.
He wants to fight cancer research.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he wants to find
cancer. Oh yeah, he wants to find the cure.
He doesn't want to fight cancer research.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
I don't want to throw
cancer research. Right. Yes.
But look at your producer throwing you under the bus there.
Come on, that's your line. You said that for 20 years.
Field Yates wants to fight cancer research. All right, let's stop studying cancer.
My favorite part of the weekend in preseason.
JimmyV.org. V.org,
right.
by the way.
V.org. Always a worthwhile cause. My favorite part of the weekend was Mike Zimmer, who did a halftime interview. He was walking back from halftime to begin the second half of their game against the Denver Broncos. If you haven't had a chance, go to @FieldYates on Twitter and watch it. It is a 30-second clip, and I bet you will laugh. I love Mike Zimmer. He calls it how he sees it. They got smacked by the Broncos over the weekend, in part because the Broncos quarterbacks both look good. But let's table that talk for right now and get into what you may or may not have seen from Javonte Williams, Matthew. He was out there because Melvin Gordon did not play at all. But he had 5 carries for 29 yards. What was more instructive, how he looked or the fact that Melvin Gordon wasn't playing?
The fact that Melvin Gordon wasn't playing.
I agree.
By the way, I mean, the Vikings defense might be bad this year.
They better not be. They had nobody out there, though. Oh, man.
I understand. But, I mean, the Broncos didn't have a top. I mean, 33-6. We'll see. I'm just saying, the Vikings defense was brutal last year, and this was a poor effort, regardless of the fact that they didn't have starters out there.
And a pick six, which is also not good, from Jake Browning.
Yeah. No. But what I would say about Javonte Williams, this is my take on Javonte Williams this year. You ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
Javonte Williams is going to be this year's Cam Akers. And that's what I mean by that.
I like that a lot.
Okay. What happened with Cam Akers last year, Cam Akers was drafted like in the fourth and sixth round last year, and he was an awful draft pick.
Right.
Because, and not all Cam Akers' fault, but he got a little bit banged up, but there was a committee there. You had Malcolm Brown, Daryl Henderson took over the job for a while there. Cam Akers was a brutal draft pick for the majority of the season, and people that had him, he was dropped in a lot of leagues. But then week 14, He ended up getting the starting job, and he was just an absolute beast down the stretch. And he won a lot of people fantasy titles down the stretch.
I like that call.
And I think that's what's going to happen with Javonte Williams. I think he's going to be overdrafted. I think people are going to be frustrated because Melvin Gordon's a starter there.
He's a good player too, by the way.
But right, Melvin Gordon is like whatever. We'll to your point, Melvin Gordon has not quote lost it yet. You know, there's contract issues, and I don't know if he's on Denver next year. But Melvin Gordon is a good player, and he will be productive for the Broncos and get a decent amount of work this year. And by the way, Mike Boone got banged up too, but I bet you they used some Mike Boone. So the point is Javonte Williams is going to be in a committee for a long time, but if you look at the end of the season schedule for the Broncos, it's ridiculous. It's a really great schedule fantasy-wise, and I think by the end of the year, Javonte Williams will take over that backfield. Melvin Gordon will still be you know around, but I do think Williams will sort of be Cam Akers-like in that he will be very frustrating for fantasy managers for much of the season. He'll be overdrafted, but towards the end of the year, I think he's going to help a lot of teams.
Last thing I'll add is that could be in part due to what happens with the Broncos, like win-loss-wise, right? Sure. If they're more competitive, I think Melvin Gordon presumably is A, running well, and B, will stay out there. If this is a 6-9 team and the Chiefs and the Chargers, maybe even the Raiders are making playoff pushes, it may be time to take a youth move because Melvin Gordon will be a free agent after this upcoming season. All right, we got about 10 minutes to rip through the rest of these games here, Matthew. So
yes,
let's begin with the Cleveland Browns, who basically played nobody that people know other than one sleeper we'll talk about in a second. But anything about the Jaguars offense that gave you excitement, anything that you thought was noticeable, any major takeaways from Trevor Lawrence?
Yeah, here's what I'll say. I still think, you mentioned you think Raheem Mostert's being undervalued.
James Robinson,
but I mean, the running back situation is a little bit weird.
Okay.
I think Marvin, and I know we're going to talk about Chenault too, but I think Marvin Jones is a massive value in fantasy leagues this year.
Yep. He looked good. He had a bunch of impressive catches. He's a professional, right? I think that's such a lame cliche to throw around sometimes, but it was clear that like they have plenty of young talent amongst that wide receiver group. They needed a guy who's been there, done that, who can show them how to fulfill potential, and Marvin Jones does that for them. Yeah,
that's correct, and I think Trevor Lawrence, leaning on that veteran, of course, Marvin Jones reunited with Darrell Bevell, who was the offense coordinator in Detroit.
Right.
Marvin Jones was a top 20 fantasy wide receiver under Bevell in their 1 year together in Detroit, and much like a lot of people, Marvin Jones looking good outside of Detroit. You escape the Lions franchise, and then what happens? Tons of success.
The reason why your mic is starting to cut
out. I mean, just a ton of success. Yeah, I mean, it just feels like, it's the so Detroit funny, Lions like, are know. Like the they're like the Adam Gase of NFL teams.
Wow.
Like you just yes. like sort of
wow.
like
Daniel, do you ever think about the fact that the Washington football team once had on its offensive staff Sean McVay?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Matt LaFleur.
Wow. Yep.
Kyle Shanahan.
Correct.
Whoa.
Now, amongst others, how many Super Bowls they won with those guys? How many
playoff
games?
They won
games?
Zero.
Playoff games.
I think they won one playoff.
You know what they all did?
They all left. Well, they made the one. They made the playoffs 1 year.
Yeah, they made the playoffs.
They lost. Yeah. That was the Seattle game. That was the year. That was the game that RG3 tore his knee.
It's funny because they all left and look where they are. Let's see, Kyle Shanahan in the NFC West. Sean McVay.
Been to the Super Bowl. Sean McVay been in the Super Bowl. Matt LaFleur been to back-to-back NFC championships.
Yeah. If what you're saying
greener
is
greener pastures,
if what you're saying. Telling me here, Stefania, if your point of bringing this up is that the person that was in charge of the football operations at that time, Bruce Allen, did not do a good job, I agree with you.
I have been very clear
in saying that I think Bruce Allen is the worst general manager in the history of professional sports.
Wow, yeah.
I have said that. I've been very clear about that. He was very frustrating.
The point is, Lions for a second.
Yeah.
Matt Millen and I say thank
job,
you for
Daniel.
That one.
Right. Daniel, you got that tossed over off your team real quick.
Yeah, Bruce Allen was lion-esque.
Yeah, we're going to... Okay. Let's
By lion, I mean Detroit Lion.
Correct. Let me ask you this
I'm
question.
I'm not impugning his...
2 minute drill for us now. Two minute drill. Pick up the tempo here.
Sorry, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Anyway,
no.
I just want to say really quickly, to everyone that's listening that's a fan of the Detroit Lions, just so you know, that's entirely about making Daniel uncomfortable and not about the Lions organization.
Absolutely.
I actually like the Lions organization. They have a lot of great people that work there. It's just more about trying to torture Daniel.
Arguably the best live show on our show's history was in Detroit.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That Detroit live show was awesome.
Love Detroit.
And
forward,
a great mascot.
Just a few other notes from that game. One, LaVisca Chenault, I talked about it. Like, I really like LaVisca Chenault. He's an explosive guy. I just wish he was not catching every pass at the line of scrimmage.
I think he's going to be Rondale Moore. I mean, again, like somebody that makes some really big
Spider-Man
plays.
Emojis.
And he's going to be, he's going to be a really good NFL player, and he's going to have some big games. But in terms of consistent fantasy value, I'm not sure we're there yet with him. Also, interesting to see Donovan Peoples-Jones have a big game here. Again, Browns weren't playing anyone, but he might be the third wide receiver over Higgins in Cleveland. He's an interesting name to keep an eye on.
Especially for 2022, because Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry are names that were putting the cart before the horse. But people have wondered, as the Browns have to pay guys like Baker Mayfield and Denzel Ward and Myles Garrett and all these other good players like Wyatt Teller, are they going to have to move on from some other pieces that are sort of higher paid towards the top of their roster? The Ravens continue their trend of winning preseason games. They've won 18 straight preseason games. I have no idea what to make of that. Probably nothing. We'll talk about the Saints, who they beat in terms of their entire quarterback situation, more on Double Trouble. But really, I had like basically no takeaway from this game. None for fantasy relevance.
I have something to add about the Ravens, just so I think people should pay attention to.
Okay.
Sammy Watkins left practice early today. With an athletic trainer from Jameson Hensley, our Ravens reporter. Keep in mind that that means they had none of their top three wideouts available for the last half of practice. You've got Marquise Brown out with a hamstring. You've got Rashad Bateman out with a groin injury for which he had surgery. And you can't imagine that they're going to rush him back. Right. And then Lamar Jackson obviously missed the first couple weeks of practice because he was dealing with COVID. My question is, how in sync could this offense possibly be when they all finally get together at the start of the season?
Well, what they're going to do is they're going to snap the ball to J.K. Dobbins on every play.
Yeah.
And then
he's
bingo,
the most
bango.
Valuable fantasy
Jameson did
right
follow
now.
Up to say that it's not serious with Sammy. It's minor. But still, at this point,
Mark Andrews.
Two quick takeaways from this, just one line. If you're drafting a Saints wide receiver, it's Marquez Callaway. He's had a very hot camp. He had a nice game here as well. If Taysom Hill is the starter for the Saints, and he started this game, if Taysom Hill is named the week one starter, he's a massive value in fantasy. This is a guy that was the 4 weeks that he was a starter last year, he was a top 12 fantasy quarterback. He's going undrafted in fantasy leagues right now because they don't know about Jameis Winston and the Michael Thomas injury hurts a little bit. But again, rushing quarterbacks have fantasy value. If they basically said like Taysom Hill's our guy, like that's a massive value in fantasy leagues because again he's being undrafted in ESPN leagues, and I do think Marquez Callaway is kind of an interesting add him to the list of late round flyers.
The Bills just narrowly squeaked by the Lions 16-15 with a late field goal to win the game. My big takeaway from this one is that Amon-Ra St. Brown, we joke about it, we've had a couple of opportunities to sort of throw him in as just a goofy line in this podcast. Looks good. He might wind up being the most valuable Lions wide receiver right away this year, which I suppose is not that bold of a statement, but look good. I think they believe internally they found a player that could be a useful piece sooner rather than later.
Keeping it really short, it's tough because Breshad Perriman didn't play, so we didn't even get to see him. Tyrell Williams had a couple of nice catches from Jared Goff. Amon-Ra St. Brown did as well. Didn't have DeAndre Swift or TJ Hockenson, so it's tough to be able to take away, but he ran hard when he got those catches field. Amon-Ra St. Brown, like he's a physical little guy.
And part of the preseason that's unique is you get to listen to the broadcast teams from the local markets.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lions talked on a couple of different occasions about how impressed the staff has been with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Not like impressed like for a fourth-round rookie, but for like a player they might need to start sooner rather than later.
Yep.
Devin Singletary played a bunch with no Zach Moss on the field. He ran 8 times for 42 yards. He looked like Devin Singletary to me. He's shifty. He can make guys miss. He's small.
Yeah.
He's going to be useful. The big question is whether he's going to have enough touchdown equity, as we discussed last week, on Double Trouble.
No, he's somebody that, and we never root for this, but he needs Zach Moss to not play in the game for whatever reason to have consistent fantasy value.
Last one here. I'll give you.
But he is good insurance if you do draft Zach Moss.
I'll give you the floor here. You get to take one takeaway because if you look at the rest of the games, really, really limited. I think sort of names of note: the Jets beat the Giants, Texans beat the Packers, Chargers beat the Rams. My biggest takeaway from that game is that Mina Kimes crushed it in the booth.
Oh,
yep.
Anything else from those games? Or
her
Bucks?
And her pants, for the record. They both crushed it.
And my pants. anything from those games, Matthew?
I'll do two quick one lines. I think Corey Davis, again, we just talk about sort of professionals, like how much fantasy value is there in the Jets, but
the Jets wide receiver I'm drafting is.
Yes, I do think if we're drafting, we talked about Elijah Moore again, sort of wait to see, but for week one reaction, Corey Davis, I thought, got an impressive target share. And we talked about this on Double Trouble last week as well. If you're drafting a Texans running back, it's Philip Lindsay. It's not David Johnson. Philip Lindsay, 5 carries for 14 yards. He had, I think, 4 times as many touches as David Johnson.
looked pretty sharp. He looked like Philip Lindsay. And last takeaway before we get into...
Disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree. I feel the same way. I felt the same way last week. I don't know that I love the idea of drafting any Texan besides Brandon Cooks this year, but if I'm taking one running back, the chance to have 1,000 rushing yards, it's Philip Lindsay, who's done it 2 out of his 3 seasons in the NFL. All 5 first-round rookie quarterbacks gave their teams and their fan bases reasons for optimism going forward. We're going to do Stefania's takeaways in just a moment, but first we start with a word from our friends at Corona. Did you know that Tony Romo is a motivational speaker now? All this football season, Tony and Corona are remotivating football fans to live the game day good life. Let Tony unlock your football fan potential at romotivation.com. There you can launch an augmented reality experience that will put Tony in your living room or at the bar next to you while you watch the game. This is awesome. It's true. You can get better at watching football. Let Romo and Corona show you how to live the game day good life. Visit romotivation.com. That's romotivation.com. Now, please drink responsibly. Corona Extra Beer, imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You know how Field says he doesn't ask for much in life?
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I wouldn't mind some Corona. I'm just saying.
If you get that,
I'm just saying.
And Corona, we don't need much. 3 beers will knock Matthew out for the entire weekend.
Oh, yeah. Listen. If Corona would, you don't need to pay me anything. Like, if I could just drink a Corona
just
here
a
on
Corona.
Air every day, let me do that.
Then we'd be good.
I'm a fan.
Do you want to get in shape, but you have trouble staying motivated?
Yes.
Yeah, well, you got to make 5-hour energy shots part of your lifestyle and get the energy boost that you need to finally get fit. Matthew, Stefania, and I have all been talking about it because we've all noticed that sometimes you just don't want to go to the gym.
Yeah.
What you need to do is you need to take a 5-hour energy shot to give you the feeling and alertness that you need to get to the gym, Field.
Yeah,
with zero
that's probably
sugar.
The reasons why I've never been to the gym is I hadn't taken a
5-hour energy. That's what it is.
5-hour energy shot.
Well, with zero sugar and convenient portable size, it's the perfect pick me up for getting stuff done. The 5-hour energy website has flavors galore like watermelon, tropical burst, cherry, peach mango, and more. There's a flavor for everyone. You can try them all, and on the site, you even have an option to build your own 12 or 24 pack. You choose the flavors, it gets delivered right to your door. If you go to 5hourenergy.com, that's the number 5. OurEnergy.com and get some 5-hour energy product today, you can use the promo code FFF to receive 10% off your order. This offer is only valid until September 30th on one order and cannot be used with other promotions. The code is not good on subscription orders. Go to 5hourenergy.com today.
All right, time for the part of the podcast that everybody has been looking forward to. It is our opportunity to pick the very large brain of Stefania Bell about what happened over the past couple of weeks. And Stefania, this trip
on
took
Boondoggle
you...
2021.
Yeah,
again, I'm wearing the t-shirts.
What was your favorite caviar that you ate, Stefania? Yeah. And how expensive, how cheap was the most expensive bottle of wine that you drank?
Mm.
Well, listen, I
have a question too.
I had
Go
people
ahead.
Helping me out with that. One of the great things about traveling, like I posted a couple times, I said, do you think this is glamorous? But you're getting in late at night and the only things open around you are fast food or no food.
Right.
You know, it's, but I have friends all over the country because I've lived a lot of places.
No one likes a bragger, Stefania.
No one likes a bragger, Stefania.
And
just
I
curious.
May or may not have seen our newest colleague. Alex Smith.
That's right.
Yes, of course. We're excited.
That's
Alex
right.
Smith, of course.
Joining the ESPN.
We're very excited to have Alex here as part of ESPN. Comeback player of the year, of the century, of the decade, of forever. Alex Smith. Stefania, I just want to know, what was, of all the names you made up for your expense reports, I'm just curious, what was your favorite one? That's my question.
Wait, are you saying for like when she took someone to dinner, or are you saying
exactly.
when she checks into a hotel?
No. When you take someone to dinner, like if it's a business thing, you have to have a person.
Right.
So I'm just saying.
Yeah,
so
no, but
Stefania,
see,
like,
because I look out for the company, I had everybody else take me to dinner.
Stefania.
That's how you do it.
Okay.
Yeah, big brain Stefania, good teammate as well.
Smart.
Let's begin.
I have a whole good list of fake names if you ever need them, by the way. Just, you know.
No doubt.
Oh, man. Stefania, let's begin in Kansas City. Patrick Mahomes, one of the first players that we want to discuss. What did you learn or see from Patrick Mahomes, who, of course, is coming off of off-season surgery?
I really think this should have been made a bigger deal than it was, but it's a credit to Patrick Mahomes that it wasn't. He just played through a toe injury. Remember, he was diagnosed with turf toe. We heard about that. You saw him struggling at times during the Super Bowl. He wasn't himself, couldn't push off that toe. had a pretty big surgery to repair the plantar plate and the ligaments underneath the base of the big toe, but looks exactly like the Patrick Mahomes we've come to love. And I thought one of the things I noticed at camp is you're outside, kind of far away from the players at this point, but you can hear that distinctive voice and the command he has in the huddle. You know, it was really something just to watch him live in practice, something I haven't done since he's joined the team. The other thing I noticed, Jerick McKinnon, now a Chief. And they created some red zone packages for him, it appears. So just something to watch.
Okay, maybe Jerick McKinnon can carve a role on this Chiefs roster, who's not super, super deep in the backfield. Of course, all of us have Patrick Mahomes ranked first amongst quarterbacks.
Mahomes. How do you spell that? He sounds like somebody he should be on my radar.
Yeah, probably.
By the way,
I know you're new to this stuff.
Yeah, that was my first stop at camp, and that day Tyreek Hill left practice early with knee tendonitis. And I thought, oh no.
I thought I told
here
you.
Here we go. This is going to be, I'm going to be blamed for everything. But
I told you you were allowed to talk to Byron Pringle, and that was it.
Just that was one your day.
Dude. Byron Pringle caught a touchdown, by the way, this week, didn't he?
Pringle looked good. He's fast as heck,
I know. Yeah. I probably should have lowered it. Hey. Real
you could talk to
though.
Like an assistant athletic trainer. Like, that's it, right? Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Real talk for 1 second, though. Stefania bringing up the point about the red zone packages for Jerick McKinnon. One of the concerns for me about Clyde Edwards-Helaire this season is not only Daryl Williams, who they like in pass protection and who played well last year, but also Jerick McKinnon, who has been getting some buzz from beat reporters about looking good and looking healthy. It's been a long time since we've seen McKinnon on the football field, but Stefania seeing the fact that looked good, looked healthy, and they're using him like... The argument for Clyde Edwards-Helaire is that he is the guy in the best offense in football, or one of the best offenses in football. And if he isn't the guy, even if he's only getting 70% or 60%, like, that's tough, because obviously they obviously have many, many weapons in Kansas City. And they proved last year they actually don't need to run the ball to make it to the Super Bowl.
No one's talked about this at all, Stefania. So let's break into it now for the first time. Dak Prescott, Dallas Cowboys, been dealing with a sore shoulder, and the team... And this drew a lot of attention. I believe it was Thursday night, tweeted, it's not reason to be concerned, no need to panic, but Dak Prescott's going for a follow-up MRI. You joined me on ESPN Radio yesterday. I thought did a really good job of explaining how, despite the fact it's an MRI, which normally carries a sort of scary connotation, there really is no reason to be concerned. Why is that, and what's the latest on Dak?
So the reason to not be concerned is with this type of injury has a lat strain. That's what's kept him out of practice for the last couple of weeks, is that serial imaging, where they do consecutive images as somebody's progressing through an injury, is not uncommon, because it's basically helps you confirm, are you seeing less swelling? Does it look like the tissue's healing? And you want the imaging to be in line with what you're seeing functionally. So they know that Dak's reporting feeling better. They know he's functionally looking better because he's progressed through a throwing program. He's now throwing like 30, 40 passes a day, expected to maybe even rejoin practice as soon as today. So the lat strain got a lot of attention because we don't hear about that much in quarterbacks. It is a thrower's injury, but you tend to see it more in baseball pitchers. If you were to look at the IL for baseball pitchers, you'd see a lot of them down with lat strains. So they did have some consultation with folks who have experience in dealing with baseball pitchers, and that generated a lot of worry. But I thought, this is really smart. You know, you bring in the people who are used to rehabbing these types of things, and you get Dak working with someone who's accustomed to that. And that's what they've done. I went out to Cowboys camp so I could see how Dak looked running around on his ankle. And then he had lat strain, and lo and behold, I didn't get to see him running around. However, it should be noted, he's been doing running workouts ever since. Obviously, he's been working with the team since OTAs. So I think everybody feels very good about Dak. I expect him back in practice. I expect him to play week one.
Did you see how Stefania, like, how magnanimous is that of Stefania to go all the way out to wine country in California to see the Cowboys camp? Like, what effort.
Her generosity knows no bounds.
And dedication.
Really, that's right.
Yes.
And by the way, I went and they had joint practice with the Rams. So I was maximizing the visit so I could watch what was happening with the Rams. It was kind of fun. A couple little skirmishes. Aaron Donald, Connor Williams getting into it a little bit.
Apparently skirmishes are a thing right now amongst the Rams after those fans Saturday night at SoFi Stadium.
I will tell you this. You know, your little Cooper Kupp looks fantastic, Matthew, as you would expect. But I'm a little concerned about Darrell Henderson. I just don't buy the every down back thing. I think they're going to end up throwing the ball more as a result, relying less on the run game as sort of the buzz.
It's a very interesting one. Let's talk about that more in Double Trouble as we sort of get through the rest of the preseason. But that was the thing, right? Is that like, if you think he can be an every down back, he's going to be a value going at like RB22. If you don't, then he might be an overpay at running back 22. Let's go to Cincinnati, Stefania.
15 touches in the Rams offense this year, I think, is going to be plenty. Like, I mean,
if you think he's either not going to be the guy or he's going to get banged up and he's going to end up missing, you know, 5 or 6 games, right? There's a reason why they drafted
him. All fair. To that point, by the way, Xavier Jones, I think, is the insurance policy you want for Daryl Henderson as it stands today, him over Jake Funk. That was one other takeaway that I had from the games this weekend.
Stefania, Joe Burrow has come out and said it. Even he is acknowledging he's having some struggles right now in training camp, but they sound more mental than physical. What can you tell us about Joe Burrow's progress?
Well, first of all, I think that's typical for anyone coming off a major injury like this. I don't think people have paid enough attention to how big Joe Burrow's injury was, because his rehab has essentially been fairly smooth. We saw him at OTAs. We saw him throwing the ball and doing some work at OTAs, and I don't think we expected that initially. But remember, he was injured late in the season, had a torn ACL, MCL, partial PCL, and meniscus injury. I mean, essentially blew out his knee. And now he's got to stand in the pocket and have defense coming at that same knee. It's his left leg, his lead leg, often injured by contact for quarterbacks. Remember, Carson Palmer had a similar devastating injury a number of years ago, incidentally, while with the Bengals. And then Tom Brady had a lead leg injury as well. And they all talk about the initial struggles when they have to be back in the pocket with players coming at them. I was lucky enough to talk to Joe Burrow while I was there, and I thought he was great at explaining what he was going through. He said the first couple days he was in practice, his instinct was to just pick his leg up, just get it off the ground and get away from the guys coming at him. And mind you, he's in the non-contact jersey. Nobody's going to touch him, but that apprehension is still there. And he recognized that he was struggling. He oriented some practice sessions after practice just to work on having people come at him so he could get that reaction to dull a little bit. He's now doing better with that. I saw him standing in the pocket and scrambling a lot. Look, the offensive line in Cincinnati, this is a legit concern. And you could look at it two ways. You could look at it as you're worried about Joe Burrow with that, or you could also look at the fact that this is forcing him to make plays quickly, to scramble, to do what he needs to do to protect himself. And I think he's a very smart young quarterback who's doing a good job with that right now. I will say he's lobbying to get some preseason action because he knows he needs to face a real defense before he steps out week one. So we'll see. Even though they haven't promised preseason action, I do think you're going to see him get out there a bit.
Penei Sewell is to the Bengals what Justin Fields is to the Denver Broncos. That's my thought when you say the offensive line is still a major, major work in progress, because they could have had Penei. He was sitting there at pick 5. Jamar Chase is going to be great, obviously.
By the way, where do the Bengals train? I just want to add this too.
Northern Kentucky.
I did talk to Jamar Chase while I was there as well. And what's interesting is you got to remember he did not play last year. And he said he's still getting the feel of football and timing down. And I think Jamar Chase is going to be great. I think he's going to improve in the second half. But I think everybody who thinks he's going to come out of the gate with a bang, it's still a work in progress. And he acknowledges that.
Stefania, where do the Bengals train? Where did you go?
Northern Kentucky.
Cincinnati.
Okay. Oh, in Cincinnati.
I think it's right across the bridge.
Oh, God.
Matthew, I help you with geography.
No, I don't need any help with geography.
I stayed in Covington, Kentucky, and then I went across the bridge in the morning to Cincinnati.
Did you get any bourbon while you were in Kentucky?
I did not. But I did get a really good
I just noticed she goes to basically where there's really good booze is what I've noticed. If you're looking for a theme for the boondoggle, boozy boondoggle tour 2021.
That day I was working.
That day I was working. She definitely clarified, though. That day I was working. I was gone for two weeks.
I did a day and a half of work.
Well, Indianapolis, they have lots of different good booze there, but they also have great shrimp at our friend St. Elmo's, where our buddy Blue took us that one time. You know, that was electric. Stefania, Carson Wentz, though, has been a huge storyline. I suppose this ties into Quentin Nelson as well. 5 to 12 weeks is the timeline the Colts gave us. But it's starting to sound more and more like it could be week one. What's your sense?
I think the Colts all along were optimistic that they could beat the outer range of that timeline projection. Part of the reason it was such a wide range of outcomes is because the sample size of these injuries is really small. The fact that Carson Wentz and Quentin Nelson had the same thing is so bizarre, I can't even tell you, because this does not happen that often. But Carson Wentz was walking around in regular shoes, not a boot, by the time I was there. And this was within the week of having surgery to basically remove the fragment of bone that was the problem. I think it's a couple of things, because there was discussion about do you rest him versus do you go ahead with the procedure. But if you're Carson, you've had a history of injuries, why not remove any concern that this is going to be a problem going forward? So I think that factored into the equation. And now it's a question of how quickly does his foot feel good and feel like he can get back out in the practice field. I don't think that they are set in stone like it's got to be week one, because they want Carson Wentz comfortable, and they have their own challenges with the entire offensive line basically banged up and people coming back at different places. So if you were watching practice, you can see that's going to be a challenge for him as well. And that may factor into how quickly they roll him back out there.
Interestingly enough, the biggest question mark I have in this Colts offense is no longer Carson Wentz's return or Quentin Nelson's return. It is the massive gaping hole they have at left tackle, because along those lines, the offensive line, it was just turnstile on Sunday afternoon against the
Panthers. They feel very good about Eric Fisher. So a couple things. They did, but it'll be interesting. I'll talk about this more later, but they're becoming experts in guys coming off of Achilles repairs. And I think that's why they were confident in bringing Eric Fisher over. Marlon Mack, obviously, coming off that same surgery.
Yeah.
And so I think that they feel good about Eric Fisher, but he's not going to be there probably the first few weeks of the season. Marlon Mack, I love him. He is a great guy, and he's going to be the benchmark for Cam Akers. Watch what happens with Marlon Mack. I think you're going to see a guy who comes back and performs at a very high level. They have Jonathan Taylor. He's incredibly athletic. I loved watching him practice. Marlon Mack will have a role. And I think this action this weekend was critical for him. He needs to learn to trust that Achilles, but he's doing everything asked of him. And I think he's going to set a new bar for how guys, particularly running backs, come back from this type of injury.
Matthew, quickly, I want Marlon Mack to be great and come back and look like what he was before the Achilles injury.
Sure.
You concerned at all, though, for Jonathan Taylor's value as a result of that?
Yeah, slightly.
I'm not.
Are you not?
I said the same thing on Friday.
Here's the thing. I mean, just whatever. Just saying, yeah. Slightly, the offensive line concerns, the fact that he's going to be the head of a three-headed committee, but Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines, I think, get enough work to just be annoying to fantasy managers of Jonathan Taylor. I have Jonathan Taylor at running back 11, so I'm clearly not that concerned, but I think his ADP is like running back 9 or something like that, so I'm slightly lower on him than consensus. I haven't looked last day or two, so somebody can tell me, but, slightly... whatever. He's my running back 11.
Yeah. I have an RB8, a little bit more bullish. The more I think about it, I'm just keep reminding myself, don't overthink this. Star player, good opportunity, fresh legs. They need
all
him.
True.
I'm in on Jonathan Taylor. All right, Stefania, let's wrap up your preseason training camp tour. Are you going back out on the road or no?
No.
Okay. You're back with us. Sorry you're back with us all the time now. But let's go to San Francisco, your beloved 49ers. What were some of your takeaways there, whether it was Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle, or anything else that you wanted to share with us?
Yeah, so George Kittle had a couple injuries last year, and I think what was interesting talking to him, he looks great. He's fully healthy. There's no issues there recovering from the foot fracture, the knee issue that he had. But, we talked a little bit about tight end university, and all jokes aside, I think what's really cool is when these guys are veterans and they learn from each other. And he said a couple of things he paid attention to is like Travis Kelce. He said he's got great tempo, but he doesn't use it all the time. He sort of makes good decisions about when he's going to operate at max speed. And he talked about Waller and sort of his route choices. And I think the things that he talked about made me think that George Kittle is going to make some business decisions this year, because it's been a problem for him to stay healthy. So just something to keep in mind. I don't think it lowers his value. I think it may actually raise it and keep him on the board. And Brandon Ayuk, really, I think, blossoming, was forced into more action in his first year than everybody really expected. But his route running is fantastic. I think it's a tribute to what he was able to do in college, kind of built it for him coming in as a pro. But he learned a lot by that experience. So I think you're going to see a bump up for Brandon Ayuk. He could become the number one wide receiver on that team.
I mean, he's part of the guys list. Him and Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
That column, I think, will be out next week, but that's TBD. I still got to figure out a couple more names that I want to include on that list.
I have a name for you.
Okay, good. Let's hear it.
Just when you're sitting there and you're saying the word, like, these are my guys.
Right.
Matthew Berry.
Wow. Yeah, field's favorite. That would be just Matthew Berry. Just
something like that. Just like, yeah. These, like, because you're sitting here going, you're saying to the world, hey, everyone, hey, world, these are Fields' guys. Who are my guys?
My favorites.
And Brandon Ayuk is one of them.
Jonathan Taylor, Matthew Berry, three comparable athletes, all going into their second year. Matthew's in the second year of geriatrics. They're going in their second year of football.
Need a good offensive line. I need volume to produce. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
It's good to have you guys back.
We just want to know if you're going to play all 17 games this year.
Yeah, right.
You know what? No, probably not. Yeah. Probably not, being honest. No.
Not going to happen.
Listen, if you're drafting me in a fantasy analyst league, Mike Clay is an important late round insurance.
Late round? Mike's not making it a late round. Yeah.
Oh, just saying, you know.
Good show.
Mid-round, whatever. Mike's a star. We love Mike.
He is. Good to have everybody back on the show here today. We are far from done. We have the Fantasy Marathon this week, and tomorrow we're going to spend part of the show telling you what it's all about, how to watch it, and when to watch it, but that's going to do it for today. We've got the Saints and Bucks up on Double Trouble tomorrow, and then it's time for the marathon.
Rotopass.com, use promo code 06010. Peace out!
See you in the 06010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.